What's good, y'all? Welcome to season 2 of Healing Ourselves, Heals Our Hoods podcast with your homegirl, Desiana Torres. This season, check it out, I want y'all to be invited into my own personal testimonies that's going to illuminate the beauty in the struggle. We're also going to have fire guests coming through to pour gems related to the topics of the hustle, the grind, the grief, and the survival that is often experienced while we chase our dreams. So stay tuned and tap in every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Sending nothing but love, peace, and joy to you and yours, always. So what's good, everybody? Welcome to another season of Healing Ourselves, Heals Our Hoods podcast. This is now going on episode 2. Before we actually get jumped into the episode, y'all, I want to create space for us to just process how we're feeling in this current moment. On a scale of 1 to 10... 10 being I absolutely feel fantastic. I feel like I could conquer the world. And 1 being the complete opposite of that. Where are you existing at on that scale? And while you think about your numbers, just kind of relax your shoulders, drop your jaw, taking a couple deep breaths, and just really feel in your body, like, what number am I really at? And so if you find yourself existing between the numbers of 1 to 5, definitely practice some self-care tonight. Maybe give yourself a nice hot shower, hot bath, listen to your favorite song, watch your favorite show. Do something to help your body kind of release some oxytocin. That is a happy hormone to kind of start flowing throughout your body in hopes that that can release some of the stress that you're feeling. If you are existing at a 6 and higher, guess what? I also want you to practice some self-care, because self-care is critical and essential no matter how we are feeling, but it's really, really critical for us to know where we're at on that scale, because we can begin to tell our partner that, like, me and my man now, there are times where I'm like, babe, I'm really at a 3 right now. Like, I'm really functioning, like, at a 3 today. Then my man knows he got to show up a little more for me so that I'm able to get myself together, and vice versa. And so if we can begin to utilize even just that simple scale within our households, it will really help us know how we can show up for the people we truly, truly, really care about. So I encourage and empower you all to kind of adapt to that too. This episode, going into it, is going to be speaking about the importance of our upbringing, about our parents' relationship, and more specifically for me, my role as the oldest. And I do want to take a moment to apologize in advance, y'all. I am hella congested right now. I'm not sure if I'm catching a cold or it's the allergy season happening now that it's spring. But your girl is just really fighting to breathe at the same time that I am talking hella. So just bear with me a little bit on that with my voice. I appreciate y'all in advance. Okay, now jumping right back into it. So I am going to be talking a little bit about my upbringing in the beautiful ways, and the beauty and the struggle, right? Because a lot of you, if you read my book, if you listen to season 1 podcast, I have shared a lot about the trauma. This season, I want to move a little different. You feel me? I want to talk about the healing aspects that came out from those traumatic experiences so that you and anyone listening can begin to understand how everything connects together when we apply the right tools, okay? Because the goal is to truly learn how to heal ourselves so that our communities can be able to show up a lot differently than what we've been limited to. And so, my upbringing. A lot of you know that I am the oldest of my tribe. And when I say my tribe, I mean like the Rugrats, my mother's kids. My father has actually had another daughter who is older than us, and our older sister is such a gem. She is somebody who we truly love and support so much, and so proud of her with all her accomplishments. But she truly takes the title of the oldest sibling. And the reason why I'm explaining this is so that y'all can understand that when I talk about my role as the oldest, I'm talking about in my own household. My sister had her household due to having a different mother. We had a different household, obviously having a different mother, and all of us having and sharing the same father. So I do come from a blended family, which I believe is beautiful as hell. I really love that about us, is that we do come from a blended family, more so that our family knows how to coexist with one another. My mother and my older sister mother, ever since they were young teenagers, both with children by my father, knew the importance of having us growing up together. And so with that mature mindset that they both carried at such a young age, me and my siblings had the benefit of really growing up with each other, really getting to experience life, spending a night at each other's houses, like growing up with that sister-brother bond. And I'm forever thankful for that. So my upbringing was spent with different parts of us in the most beautiful ways. Another part of my upbringing that it is important is that oldest sibling syndrome. More so me talking about what were the roles that I had to carry in my household. One specific one I would share is the sacrifice that comes with having to step into shoes to help the family survive. And so with my mother being a single parent, it was really hard for her to navigate how to put food on our table, how to pay our rent, how to pay the bills all by herself without a high school diploma, you know, trying to work these minimum wage paying jobs to feed a family of five, right? So it was really tough for us. And at the same time, I'm really thankful that not only did my mother have me as a backbone to help her carry the weight of the household, but my aunties, my tias, definitely showed up and showed out on both sides, my mother's side and my father's side, to make sure that we were always taken care of. And I mean that in the most beautiful way. They showed up to give us food when we didn't need it, clothes if we didn't have it, game if we, you feel me, was navigating the streets. And all of what they poured into us really gave us the safety that we needed and also the security that we needed as children to really begin to navigate the world around us. So again, because we had that safety, we knew who we could talk to, we knew we could be open with certain folks in our family, and the realism that existed there, my family just talked about it like it was. They didn't sugarcoat nothing. And so if you're kind of wondering, where does Desiana get this courage to just go out there and just talk? It came from my tias, watching how they talk at the house, watching how they call out BS and really hold people accountable. That's where that mentality, or more so that skill set, was born from. That environment and that security they gave us really allowed for us to focus on our dreams and goals. They carried the weight of everything. Although we've been through hella trauma as kids, we didn't really understand it. We didn't really process it. We didn't know that we was going through it during those time frames, right? I didn't understand all of it until I became an adult. Of like, damn, this is why I was reacting that way. Or damn, this is probably why I was disconnected in these aspects of my childhood. And you get to piece all those with now the wisdom. However, at that time frame, we didn't have all that. We wasn't thinking like that. We just thought it was normal. We just kept it pushing. So the upbringing was a critical part of my development, because I've watched the way that my aunties handled their own life struggles. Being the oldest gave me the opportunity to low-key sit at the adult's table when kids were not supposed to be present in those conversations. I always kind of low-key got the exception of, well, you know, if you feel me, she's old enough, she'll understand, or maybe she needs to hear this. And I was so intrigued by all the different stories that my aunties would share, because it talked a lot about the struggles they had to face, not only as single women, but as parents, and navigating the hardships of that. And I could say the least that through their shared stories is where I learned to move different. I was like, damn, Thea, my auntie was like, man, if I would have done this, or if only I could have this, that's the advice that I took and applied to my life. Because what I was hearing is, this is a result of an outcome that came from blank, whatever experience that was. That's how I applied myself growing up. I always did everything that they told me they wish they would have done differently, because they felt like it would have gave them a different outcome. And I was really, at this age, really desperate for something different. Something that didn't look like the way that my world looked like at home. Something that looked different from my reality in my community. And all of it just kind of resorts down to that hope. They gave me hope that something different could exist if I moved differently. And that's deep. A lot of us have family members who have been through so much. And if you listen to the things they say, they will share you their, if, what do they call it? The coulda, shoulda, wouldas. if you listen to those and you kind of low-key apply them into your life, just bypassing that, excuse me, it will then give you the opportunity to really tap into your highest potential, because you don't have to go through that same mistake they went to if you can go around it or jump over it in the ways that they now know that they can navigate it. So my whole childhood, I spent very curious as to the lives that the oldest have lived in ways that they have probably wished that they could have done better. And it's not just with my tias. I've asked these specific questions or listened to the way that my grandmothers talk, my great aunts talked. And again, I was really raised around women. Like, I'm not kidding. I didn't really have a lot of uncles that I grew up with. I didn't really have grandpas that were near us that we kind of low-key grow up with. So, you feel me? I'm getting all this wisdom and perspective from women, and a lot of women who carry a lot of generational trauma surrounded by men. So, of course, my upbringing was also spent with me adapting to this hyper-independence, or what do they call it? Hyper-vigilance. But more so hyper-independence, where I was really like, I don't need no man. I really would have a shirt, y'all, that I would wear to high school. I don't even know who bought it for me and why my mama let me leave the house in a shirt. But I was like, I don't need no boy. I need a man. And that's kind of the perspective that I had of like, yo, I need somebody who's going to really come through and stay on the ground. And I think that might have been related to what I wish I had growing up too. But more so, I've seen my mother and my tias handle everything by themselves. These women know how to fix cars. They know how to fix anything in the house. They are handy women. Like, literally, they are folks who have a lot of, how do you express this? Emotional intelligence, to a degree, for sure. But they had a lot of game that they provided to us that also gave us key to pivoting to a whole new area of life. So I want to share so much light and wisdom to those aspects of my upbringing, because they have played a critical role in my ability to be able to chase for my dreams. If they didn't provide me the safety, you feel me, the shelter that we had, the safety to navigate the streets with hella wisdom, the security that we needed to know that we always had a place to put our head at night, and we always would have food on the table, even if it was just limited of it. We always had it, you feel me? Our family worked really hard to give it to us. And so that security gave me the opportunity to really jump out and go reach for the stars. And I wish this safety and security upon all the kids that I now work with who are students in high school. So the critical key components to academic success for kids, y'all, sometimes is really just security and safety. I'm not even kidding. These kids go through so much. They're navigating through so much. And all they really need sometimes is someone to just peep game and open up and talk to them and tell it like it is. And you know what I mean? Allow for them to share their voice and their own truth without feeling judgment or being told to be quiet or, no, you can't talk. You know, just all the ways that they are often limited. And so if we create more safety and security, my hope is that more folks can also reach for the stars. In terms of my parents' relationship, I also want to dive deep into that to give insight that they were two teenage parents. And if you've read my book, you've seen a lot of what I've went through, and it highlights that oftentimes teen parents don't have the capacity or the skill sets that are needed to really protect their own mental health, thus help kids navigate their mental health. I mean, I feel like it could be different a little now, you know, given how much access to some of those resources we have now with like the access to the internet. But I truly feel like my parents genuinely had so much love for each other. When I look back at the photos and the photo albums, when I hear my mother share stories about when we were little, when we were in diapers, the extent to the relationship, you know, she really expressed that, you know, they really did have mad love for each other, like for real, really did genuinely love deeply for one another. However, the way that they both coped with the pain that they had experienced in either their own households, but also in the community that we lived in, it embedded their ability to show up and be present for each other and for their kids. And that is the outcome of which the childhood trauma exists on, is their inability to have those resources to really cope and process what they've been going through. And so my parents' relationship is something that I've witnessed that has honestly impacted a lot of my connection to other people. I didn't believe that love could exist because why didn't my parents still love each other? You know what I mean? Like, there was these questions I had as a kid of like, how can love exist if the two people who bore life to me can't even get along and they once was deeply in love? You know, like, as a kid, you don't understand it. You ask all these really good, really tough questions at the same time that you're navigating with trying to figure out what it is that you're going through. So their relationship obviously was made, like, I'm saying probably because I don't know too much about everything, but I'm hoping we were all made genuinely with love. However, how we were catered to, there were limits there because of only so much that they knew and so much they had access to. And a lot of the generational trauma that they had taken upon is oftentimes what got passed on to us. Not on purpose, you feel me? But because they didn't have the tools and resources, by default, a lot of that stuff passed on to the next generation. So my role of the oldest, there was a lot of weight with me navigating just the simple experiences that I was just sharing with y'all. Being the oldest in the household, watching the house low-key fall apart, watching the community low-key fall apart, and seeing people that you love so deeply fall into unhealthy coping skills that pulled them closer and closer and closer into the streets. And there were people that I called family, people that I call friends. Like, I don't have no judgment in the way that people cope because I get it, life is tough. I, however, didn't like witnessing what that looked like. It really did not sit comfortably in my stomach and my soul. And when people ask me, Desiana, why do you do it? How do you do it? What makes you push the way you push? It's those experiences right there. Seeing what it's like to walk to school, passing hella candlelight corners with posters and balloons, knowing that the faces that were on the posters were kids that look like me. That did something to me. Going to school and seeing how teachers reacted to the kids that were going through so much in life, but no one ever asked or cared to ask what they was going through. And because they were very reactive, maybe angry, maybe in class disrupting or acting out, it was really a cry for help, but they seen it as them being a troubled teen. So them being kicked out of class really, you feel me, gave me that feeling that something had to be different. I took all those experiences, I put them in a bucket and said, I'm gonna do something with all of y'all, because my people, my family, my folks, people who continue to live in these neighborhoods do not deserve this, y'all. We have so much potential, so much power, but how we go about creating space and opportunity for us is very unrealistic. How are you telling this generation of kids, hey, go to college, make something of yourself, when all they have access to is drugs, gangs, violence? You feel me? Like, there's a gap that has to be bridged and that has to be met so that kids can begin to see themselves outside of their environment so that they can reach a higher level. Like I mentioned before, my tías gave me, my mother gave me that security and that safety to where they made us, you better look at this shit. Look at how these folks are here on the corners. Like, look at how look at how this exists in the world. Y'all better pay attention. Like, that's the upbringing that I had. I was told to pay attention, told to be attentive to the ways that our folks were failing and falling through the gaps so that we could, in a sense, have more opportunities to jump over those cracks and in hopes that we could make it to whatever goals we had aligned for ourselves. So all the sacrifices that my families have been through personally have contributed to the way that I exist today. Had they not gone through what they've gone through, the wisdom that they passed on to me and those tables that I sat at would not exist for me. So while we can find so many things of how our families probably haven't worked in our favor, probably were traumatic or what, so I want to challenge you to also try to dig deep to see what did work for you. what did align with helping you become the version of yourself that you are currently when you look in the mirror? In what ways are you proud? In what ways do you carry shame? Like, these are all critical questions that we can begin to analyze when we give ourselves time and permission to feel what we feel, or maybe feel what we've never had permission to feel, right? I hope if you connected to the material that was shared today that you carry more pride navigating the world that you are existing in now, that you know that hella folks before us have made tough sacrifices to even give us as far as what we were limited to. And the goal is for us to take those same batons and continue to run forward so that future generations can continue to benefit from the seeds that are being planted along the way. I hope that this episode is anything and everything that you possibly needed today. And I hope that y'all also tap in next week on Wednesday at 7 p.m. for the next episode. And with that being said, y'all, always remember that you gotta feel it to heal it. And that's how healing ourselves heals our hoods. Hope y'all have an amazing night.
Thank you again for tuning in with my podcast, Healing Ourselves Heals Our Hoods. Don't forget to subscribe and turn on your notifications for future episodes that will be full of authentic storytelling by members of our own community. You can find me on Instagram at CONFI_DEZ. If you haven't already gotten your copy of my poetry book titled The Becoming of Her, be sure to get yours today. We forget that reading is just as reflective and powerful. I'm sending lots of love and peace and light to you all. May we continue to heal ourselves and each other every day.